are listening to the Unsung Lung Podcast, presented by Alberta Lung. Everyone knows it, but for some of us, it feels like a swear. The C word. Cancer. I lost both my grandpas to cancer, and my uncle. Sometimes I look back at pictures of my uncle and I at Commonwealth Stadium watching football, and to be totally honest, it hurts. But I guess sometimes that's life. I didn't lose my family members to lung cancer specifically, so I'm not too well educated on the area, but that's why we have two amazing guests on the show today to tell us about lung cancer and why it is such a pervasive disease in Canadian society. Sorry for taking this long to introduce myself. My name is Jacob Sperling, and I am the host here of our amazing show, the Unsung Lung Podcast. We have a great interview today with two of the leading minds in lung cancer anywhere in Canada. Before I dive into our guest bios, I'll just briefly mention one of our main topics today. We'll be speaking about Lung Cancer Canada, also known as LCC, which is Canada's leading resource for lung cancer education, patient support, research, and advocacy. It was founded in 2002 and is based in Toronto. Their mission is to increase public awareness about lung cancer, support and advocate for patients and their families who deal with the disease, and provide educational resources to patients, families, healthcare professionals, and the public. I will say that their mission is very close, if not identical, to a lot of Alberta Lung's missions. Two foundational people within LCC are Dr. Quincy Chu and Dr. Paul Wheatley Price. Dr. Chu is a medical oncologist at the Cross Cancer Institute here in Edmonton. He is also the committee chair for the Canadian Cancer Trials Group Independent Investigational New Drug Program and also a member of the Medical Advisory Committee for LCC. Dr. Wheatley Price is also a medical oncologist at the Ottawa Hospital. He is also the immediate past president of LCC. A cool part about Dr. Wheatley Price's bio is that he is the host of Lung Cancer Voices podcast, which covers current issues, relevant topics, and patient experience in lung cancer. Dr. Wheatley Price's podcast is really cool, as it is sort of like our podcast here at Alberta Lung in that it is giving a voice to those with lung disease and people who research it, specifically lung cancer, throughout Canada. However, it's obviously different in the fact that Dr. Wheatley Price is an expert in lung health and oncology, whereas little old Jacob over here is just a law student with a passion for health policy. Nevertheless, I think our interview today is an amazing juxtaposition between views from within the medical world and views from outside of it. We touch on everything from CAR T cell therapy to the role of not-for-profit organizations like LCC and Alberta Lung in Canada's health landscape. I really hope you enjoy the show and my discussion with Dr. Quincy Chu and Dr. Paul Wheatley Price. So without any more delay, I'll send you through to the interview. Okay, well, I am so lucky and honored to be sitting down with two of the leading medical oncology experts on lung cancer in Canada. So a massive welcome to Dr. Quincy Chu and Dr. Paul Wheatley Price. Welcome to the show today. And I'll start with you, Dr. Chu. How's everything in your world? How's everything at the Cross Cancer Institute here in Edmonton?
So things are busy, just like everybody else, right? I always say that business is booming for better or for worse. But other than that, right, advances in care of lung cancer patients is happening actually frequently these days. Can't say it's daily, but it's frequent. And it's actually very satisfying right now.
Amazing. Yeah, Dr. Chu was talking to me before the podcast about just the rates of non-smoking lung cancer, and we'll get into that later, but it's honestly, it's kind of terrifying. So we'll get into all of that statistics and all of that. But what about you, Dr. Wheatley Price? How is everything? I believe you're in Ottawa, correct?
Correct. Hi, Jacob, and hi, Quincy. Thanks for having me on your podcast. It's a beautiful sunny day here in Ottawa. It's kind of crisp, like +7, and a great dog walking day. And so I'm actually working from home today, but it's been it's pretty busy. Always busy. Unfortunately, plenty of lung cancer to go around. I don't think we're going to be out of business for any time soon.
Definitely, yeah. That's one of our, what's the word, like mission statements, I guess, is at Alberta Lung when I was working there full time, is we'd like to work ourselves out of work and not have to deal with lung disease. But obviously, it's not going to happen anytime soon. So we may as well dive straight into the questions here. And I'm going to try to ask these in rotation a bit, going in between both of you. But certainly chime in if you have something to say about a question that I've asked to your colleague. So this first question is for Dr. Wheatley Price. I'm wondering what drew you to lung cancer research in the first place?
So I'm English by background, as you might have told it, might have figured out. It's a benefit in a Canadian clinic because people think that I'm cleverer than I am just because I have an English accent. I trained in London at and I trained initially at a hospital called the Royal Free Hospital, which is a beautiful spot in North London, just on the edge of Hampstead Heath. And if you're ever in that part of the world. And the first guy I worked for was a guy called David Chow during my training, and he taught like he looked after people with lung cancer. So I think my first exposure really in depth in oncology was lung cancer, and I didn't have much to do at the time because there weren't many treatments at the time. But what I really did appreciate right from the get-go was I just like lung cancer patients. And of course that's a if you think about it in any depth, that's a pretty silly thing to say. Because, does that mean well, I don't like people who have prostate cancer or bowel cancer? Of course that's not true at all. And we see the full spectrum of humanity in all of these diseases. But lung cancer is, we know, skewed a little bit in terms of its demographics towards people who are less likely to have a college education, for example. More likely to live in rural communities, lower socioeconomic groups. And I just really enjoyed working with that kind of demographic. So that's what drew me into lung cancer. And then as I went through my training, of course, we train in medical oncology, as Quincy and I both have done in breast cancer and bowel cancer and all of the different malignancies. But I never lost that initial attachment for lung cancer.
That's really amazing. I never would have thought that. Usually when you think what draws you to a specific area in medicine, it's the medicine behind it, it's the scientific aspects, but you don't think about the patients always. But that's really
You're right.
incredible.
You're right. In fact, it's not at all. In fact, the reason people often ask me, why did you go into oncology more generally rather than lung cancer specifically? And I said, well, I do find it interesting. There's no doubt the science is interesting. Quincy is a far smarter scientist than I am, but I do find that interesting. But the things that I really like about it is I like the patient contact. I like the relationships you build with patients at a very intense and important moment in their lives. Get to know them and their families very well. And the other thing I really like about oncology is the kind of multidisciplinary team environment that we work in. I find that the whether it's the clerks at the front desk, the nurses we work with, social workers, other physicians, just very, very satisfying.
Yeah, amazing. So same question for you, Dr. Chu. What drew you towards a career in lung cancer research and treatment and things of that nature?
So, like, I actually didn't know that Paul and I are around the same vintage because I thought that he was younger than me a while ago. And it's again, already the same thing. Like during
I just
training,
have more hair than him. That's all. That's why he says that.
absolutely. And so it's like, yeah, lung cancer is particularly when we were in training, the treatment is few and far between, not working very well. and have a lot of side effects. And they are older, many of them were smokers. And so it's really like we're a rock and a hard place. And so I thought, right, well, there's a lot of opportunities, right, that we can do to improve their outcomes, right? If we have a better understanding of lung cancer, what exactly it is, or nowadays they are, and then, right, if we can develop better drugs, right, and also to try to get them through the system faster so that they are not, right, dwindling around and then go from potentially curable to become metastatic. And then, right, that would probably, and then, right, screening. And then, right, ultimately we can improve, right, that. And so to me, as a clinician head, that would actually be very satisfying, especially you can make an impact in one of these steps or more than one of these steps. And as Paul also say, is that like cancer is actually like the expansion of our knowledge is exponential, especially in the last 5 to 10 years. And so like scientifically, oncology is very interesting and lung cancer is really riding the front of the wave or in understanding the biology of the cancer. And so like to stimulate your mind or as a so-called scientist head, this is actually great. And then I did my fellowship in early drug development. And so I would just say, if one of these drugs can actually make it right to the clinic and eventually used commonly to treat patients, and that would be the highlight, right, of my life. And so I therefore go into that.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's amazing to hear both the backgrounds of both of you. So we'll head back to Dr. Wheatley Price for this next question. I'm wondering if you can tell our listeners what Lung Cancer Canada is and maybe some of its goals and ambitions of the organization, just everything to do with Lung Cancer Canada.
Yeah, great. I'm delighted to do that. It's one of my passions. I often talk about Lung Cancer Canada in my career as being kind of a bit of gravy, really. You know, I think when we go to med school, you know, if you told me 30 years ago when I was at med school that, you know, that I would be, you know, an advocate, I'd be president of a charity and I'd have a podcast series, I would have said, what's a podcast? And I don't think so. And then I moved to Canada about 17 years ago now to do a research fellowship. And then my wife, who is Canadian, and I, we stayed. And one of the people that I met during my fellowship was Dr. Natasha Lale. And if she's not been on your podcast, you should get Natasha on. She's at Princess Margaret. And she was the president of Lung Cancer Canada at the time. And she got me involved. And then I worked my way up through the ranks. I joined a medical advisory committee. Then I became chair of the medical advisory committee. And then I became president after Natasha. And I did that until about 2021. Now, and now it's Dr. Stephanie Snow, who's Nova Scotia and is doing a fabulous job. So what is Lung Cancer Canada? Well, it's the only charity in Canada that's sole purpose is to support patients and their family members and their caregivers with who have a diagnosis of lung cancer. You know, there are other charities that, you know, do have somewhat of a lung cancer footprint, whether it's the Lung Health Foundation or Alberta Lung or you know, Canadian Cancer Society, etc. But Lung Cancer Canada is, we like to sort of tell ourselves and we like to tell our community, I think that we can be a trusted voice, you know, for lung cancer. Our mission is around education, awareness, and support. Those are our kind of main goals. So raising awareness that lung cancer is the most commonly diagnosed cancer in Canada. It's by far the major cause of cancer deaths, more than a quarter of cancer deaths from lung cancer. You know, things people don't know, that more women die of lung cancer than breast, ovarian, cervical, uterine cancers combined, for example. Education for patients and caregivers. So, you know, for example, through podcasts, but through patient summits, through our materials, we have an updated patient guide, things like that. We do a lot of advocacy work. So whether that's, you know, a couple of weeks ago or about 10 days ago, I was on Parliament Hill, for example, on behalf of Lung Cancer Canada to talk about lung cancer screening, actually with a radiologist from Edmonton who was here on the Hill as well. We do a lot of regulatory work to try and advocate for new treatments to be approved and funded. Dr. Chu is part of our medical advisory committee, where we provide submissions for all clinician and patient input to support new indications for drugs. And increasingly, in the last few years, we've been getting involved in research as well. We have a number of research grants that we give out, some purely through Lung Cancer Canada, some in partnership with other pharmaceutical companies for some of them, others with the Lung Ambition Alliance. So we've been doing a lot of that. What else? We have peer-to-peer support networks. We support groups in various parts of the country. We have a bit of a fundraising arm, of course, to pay for all of this. So we do lots, but the main core, it's about education, support, and awareness.
Yeah, that's amazing. It sounds an awful lot like Alberta Lung. Not much different in that aspect, except it's obviously very specific to lung cancer. So this question, I'm going to stick with you, Dr. Wheatley Price. As the former president of LCC, the one removed, how do you believe the organization has grown and changed since you joined? Do you notice anything, like, I'm not sure, in terms of maybe smoking, whether that's dealt with? How do you think the organization has changed?
Well, gosh, lots has changed in the past 15 years in lung cancer, and Lung Cancer Canada has had to reflect that. So if we go, maybe probably best to put lung cancer changes first and then Lung Cancer Canada second. Just a few highlights in the last 15 years has been the emergence of targeted therapies. So identifying molecular subtypes of lung cancer and then drugs that can work in those subtypes. That's been a huge explosion and has led to challenges with access to drugs and access to testing to find those abnormalities. Immunotherapy burst on the scenes in lung cancer about 8 years ago now, and means more and more people with, even with stage four lung cancer, can live far longer than they ever did and live well. And now it's improving cure rates in early stages. Lung cancer screening has been for a long time our number one advocacy ask. That was not a thing 15 years ago, and now it is a thing. It's a thing that has a program in British Columbia. It's got a program in Ontario. Nova Scotia has announced. Alberta is working on a program, and Quebec has a pilot. So this is spreading across the country. And in fact, I was at the Parliament meeting a couple of weeks ago where we were talking about the Canadian Task Force on Preventative Healthcare and their need to update their guidelines on lung cancer, which are just out of date now. So those are kind of some of the things that have happened in lung cancer. So Lung Cancer Canada has had to respond to that. So that means more advocacy work at in terms of the drug approvals, for example. The materials have to be constantly updated. Another thing I think, though, that we've been good at, aside from the changes in lung cancer, is we are now truly Lung Cancer Canada. I think there was a sense that 15 years ago we were more Lung Cancer Toronto, or maybe a little bit Lung Cancer Toronto and a few other spots in Ontario. And now we really are a national organization. And that's reflected from, say, the board level, where we have board members in British Columbia, Alberta, Quebec, of course, our president now in Nova Scotia. To support groups across the country, events that we run across the country. So really, I think we've become truly a national organization. And, that's been reflected in, we're still a small charity, but, our staff has been able to increase, our budgets have been able to increase, et cetera.
Yeah, that's incredible. It's great to hear that it's been boosting and the stock has been increasing, for lack of a better phrase, in terms of Lung Cancer Canada, because we need advocates and patient voices and expert voices out there to be able to spread awareness, for sure. Just as you mentioned, one of the key factors of Lung Cancer Canada. So these next two questions are for you, Dr. Chu, but obviously don't hesitate to speak up if you have any thoughts, Dr. Wheatley Price. So I'm wondering, Dr. Chu, what is the Investigational New Drug Program? I hope I got the title correct. Perfect. So I'll say it one more time because it's a long title. Investigational New Drug Program. And I'm wondering, I believe you're the chair in that program, correct? So What is that program? What's your role? And yeah, tell us all about it.
So the Investigational New Drug Program is under the Canadian Cancer Trials Group. It was established many years ago, right after the Canada Cancer Act was put together. It's really is a national organization to try to have more clinical trials available or for Canadians so that they will be able to have a chance of getting the new cancer drugs, and then that may potentially benefit them. And the Investigational New Drug Program was established around 25, 30 years ago by Dr. Elizabeth Eisenhower and Dr. Leslie Seymour. They are all from Kingston, Queen's University. And this is really, at the time, any new cancer drugs that are developed in the lab, thinking what they're looking like, there may be activities in animals. So we're going to find the dose, which is the main purpose of the phase one study at these new drug studies at the time. And Canada did not have a lot of opportunities. So they're trying to bring those opportunities to Canadian patients, again, trying to provide new drug options when the patients run out of options. But that was then, and now is actually more than that, It's not just doing that. We are also this program has made a lot of international impact of how to evaluate tumor responses on CT scans. They are now looking at, they're using new technology to look at what Paul has mentioned before, mutations in cancers. And so that is in the blood. So instead of biopsy, we can do it in the blood. For particularly, they have done a lot of work in prostate cancer, new methodology of how to understand the biology of the cancer, the biology of the drug. So, and then recently they're looking at how to look at the CT scan to provide us more clues as to whether the patient is responding or not. So this program has evolved from just really is testing drug to now a full new deal to understand the drug, understand the biology, understand the science, and make new waves to the world. And as the chair, I was the chair from 2020, I have to work back, 2021 as the chair to now 2023. Now I just stopped down last year. Now I'm the past chair. I'm still in the committee. The chair's job is to host a meeting when there are pharmaceutical company wants to provide some information about their pipeline, which is the new drugs, or drugs that we can potentially access to develop studies on. And then to try to, as a group, to iron out how the study should be done, how should it be designed. So a lot of that type of work. And it's actually very satisfactory because you are looking from a different lens, Most of my days are looking at just new drugs and lung cancer. But when they go into specific cancer, I learn something about those cancers as well. So it's a lot of learning, a lot of collaborations. And this is actually very satisfying, with that.
Definitely. Yeah, that's amazing to know. Go ahead, Dr. Wheatley-Price.
I am not an expert in IND or new drugs and at all. So I'm not going to comment too much about that. Other than I just think, for people listening, it might be nice to get a sense that when we talk about improving the life for patients with lung cancer, this whole spectrum. So, Quincy is really involved at this particular place in the spectrum of bringing new drugs to the clinic and discovery. And then Lung Cancer Canada is sometimes right at the other end where the drugs that Quincy has worked on and work, we then at LCC are looking to see, how can we now ensure that there is equitable and broad and affordable access to get the drug to the patient. A bit like, when the pandemic was happening and there was the big rush to develop the vaccine, and there were two bits that were kept popping up on the news. One is how close are we to the vaccine, and the second was how do actually we get the needle into people's arms. And so I think just when you kind of listen to what we're talking about, you can get a sense that there's an awful lot that goes on. So we sometimes call it from bench to bedside, getting a drug from the from, you know, the petri dish to then the early phase investigation on new drugs that Dr. Chu does, and then all the way through to where maybe we're more involved as a charity, is that final sort of fund access, availability, equity perspective.
Yeah, that's amazing. It shows that there's obviously both sides to drug development. There's the organizational side, and then there's the scientific side. It all connects back into, like you mentioned, getting the drug into people's arms, whatever it is, or having a drug that helps with lung cancer. So in a similar vein to the last question, Dr. Chu, and lung cancer research, I'm wondering if you can kind of tell us how targeted therapeutics therapies like CAR T cell therapy affected clinical research for lung cancer treatment. And as a really brief explanation for our listeners, which could be completely wrong, I don't know, you'll obviously clear it up for us. This therapy modifies immune cells called T cells to better fight cancer cells. And this treatment is long-term because the cells maintain their abilities when replicating. So maybe say whether that's right or not, or just give us a little bit about what CAR T cell therapy is and how it has affected lung cancer treatment.
So CAR T cell, as you have mentioned, that these are actually T cells, right, that are coming from the patient. And in the lab, they actually modify them so that, right, they can recognize certain proteins that are expressed in the cancer cells and then go and attack them. And these T cells were then, right, led to the immune system to now able to recognize the cancers and therefore having a more long-lasting response. And so we might be able to cure the patients, right, more easily, or even, right, less of one step back, right, to provide them with long-term survival. The thing about CAR T cells right now in terms of lung cancer is not yet there. Right now, most of the CAR T cells are applicable in blood cancer, so hematologic malignancies like lymphoma, leukemia, those kinds, because the protein that the T cells are basically manufactured to recognize are fairly uniquely present in the leukemic cells or the lymphoma cells. Whereas in what we call solid tumors or lung cancer, which is one of them, these proteins are very often still in normal tissues. So we're facing some issues in terms of side effects, so it's not yet there. And then the type of cancer is also different, because blood cancers, they're usually floating in bloodstream or have a lymph node. They're not huge, not like sometimes lung cancer can be 5-6 centimeters. And these T cells, although, all right, they are manufactured to attack, but they don't go into the tumor, the core of the tumor very well. So these cells it limits, right, its ability to work, right, well. So until those things, right, have been solved, right, I don't think, right now, with the way that science evolved so quickly, I think, right, it may be in the future, or I will hear more about CAR T cells in, or what we call solid tumors, including lung cancer. And as Paula mentioned, right, lung cancer, the biggest wave that we have made since 2005 is the identification of certain genes that are abnormal, and they are the main driver of the lung cancer. And therefore, right, if we switch off this light switch, then the cancer cells will stop growing, they will shrink, and some of them will die. And that has made a huge difference in the benefit, right, of these treatment to these specific, right, patient population. But at the same time, the side effects become a lot less, right, than that of chemotherapy. They're different from chemotherapy, but they're a lot less. And therefore, patients have a much better quality of life. They tolerate it better. And so they can continue to live, right, a very meaningful and fun life. And that's actually really is the goal, right, of, right, all of us, right, doing what we are doing. And then, right, the last 8 years has been the immunotherapy, which is kind of like CAR T cells, but we are using the immune system, the immune cells, right, or the T cells, they're already in your body, but they're just not working enough, and they're not working very well, right? They either are very tired, or because of the cancers have produced certain things to make them not able to recognize, not very effective in killing cancer cells. And so now we're getting immunotherapy, we call it, right, PD-1, PD-L1, CTLA-4, to reinvigorate your own immune system to get it to attack. And they are still, mostly attacking the cancer cells with some normal cells that are harmed, but most patients tolerate it well. And this type of therapy really in the last 8 years have made a huge difference in Paul and my workload. Because a lot of these patients are under treatment for a good long period of time. And then even if they finish, they still have a mass sitting there, but they're very well. They have no symptoms. After 2-3 years, it's not growing. We're following them. And that part make a big difference to the patient because they're alive, they're well, they don't have a lot of health issues from the cancer. And so it's great to see. And more, different ways to target lung cancer are coming. And so instead of in the past, when we were in training, we have one entity called lung cancer. Maybe you can divide it in two, non-small cells versus small cell lung cancer, that is it. But now, because of the scientific discovery, we're now basically dividing lung cancers. The other day I counted maybe about 20 to 30 different subtypes. Each one of them are different. Each one of them, we deal with them differently. And then, one drug works and we want to find the next drug that will work better or overcome the resistance. So it's just kind of like a forever machine to develop more and more things for patients. And so that everybody is living longer and better. And hopefully because of that, we can drive down a little bit of cost because drugs doesn't need to as long a development plan, then ultimately benefit the patients and society the most.
Yeah, that's incredible. I love hearing the scientific side in addition to obviously we're speaking about charities a lot and that's more social, but it's obviously incredibly important to know and understand the scientific side and pass that along to our listeners. So back to you for this one, Dr. Wheatley Price. I'm curious, what made you decide to start your podcast called Lung Cancer Voices? Mm-hmm. Obviously, I have a vested interest in podcasts.
Yeah.
Please give us the origin story of Lung Cancer Voices.
So the first podcast that I recorded was an interview with a patient called Marielle Burris. And I'm delighted to say she's still alive and well, and she was first diagnosed with lung cancer many, many years ago, and she's actually recorded two podcasts now with me because she's had two lung cancers, and that's not betraying any clinical confidences because she's told the story on the Lung Cancer Voices podcast. Marielle and her family approached me about 5 years after her first diagnosis to say that they wanted to give back and they wanted to support lung cancer. And they owned a successful restaurant business. Their daughter was also a communications expert at Queen's, before at one of the universities here in Ottawa. So we sort of sat down together and we talked about what we wanted to do. And I've been a podcast fan. There really weren't lung cancer podcasts out there. And it was very much aligned. I was president of Lung Cancer Canada at the time to think, well, let's do a podcast for patients and for family members. So the Burris family funded the initial work. They linked us with a sound engineer at Algonquin College. Here in Ottawa, and he still is our sound engineer, and so we send him all of our podcasts when we've recorded them. And so they gave us some seed money, and that we ran for a while, and then Lung Cancer Canada took over the funding, and we've done about 80 podcasts now, Jacob, I mean, you do it. It's fun, huh? It's a lot of fun. You get to meet some really neat people. You get to hear some really neat stories. And we have a complete range. So I've interviewed lots of patients with lung cancer, some family members, lots of physicians about, what their research is about, or we do updates from the major conferences. We've had sort of one-off topics. We've had one about medical assistance in dying. We've had one about cannabis and lung cancer. We've done some about finances. We've done some about palliative care. We've done a bunch recently, which we call our Research in Canada series. So award winners from the Lung Cancer Canada Research Grants. We get them on the pod to so people can hear kind of what the newest stuff that's happening in lung cancer research in Canada is. So, you know, one of the first ones was a doctor called Ronelle Myers, who's a respirologist in Vancouver. So people may have heard the story that, oh, your dog can sniff if you've got cancer. Well, maybe it's true. And Ronelle is doing the research on that the exhaled chemical content of your breath might be a clue to lung cancer. And so, you know, we get topics like that. We generally, they're about half an hour long, somewhere 20 to 40 minutes. And we try to release about one every three weeks or so. I was just at a conference last weekend, the Ontario Thoracic Oncology Conference. And so that's a rich picking. So we've set up to have a podcast with an advanced practice nurse about what they do and about the way they run some clinics that manage side effects of lung cancer drugs, particularly immunotherapy. And then I'm really excited to, I'll tell you now, but it's going to come out at some point, is I'm going to be sitting down with a mother and daughter medical oncology duo, Michaela Fabraro and Silvana Spadafora, who are medical oncologists in Sault Ste. Marie. And so they're going to be talking about what it's like to be, to have lung cancer in rural communities, which is a real big issue in Canada. We know that rural communities do get the short end of the stick sometimes with lung cancer. So I'm going off on a digression here, but that's how I got into it from the Burris family. And I have to say then it's been a real, I'm the net winner in doing this for sure. And just the people I get to chat to.
Definitely. Yeah, that's the biggest benefit that I find is speaking to people that you never would in your regular everyday life. Health stuff is sort of my passion. I'm in law school. That's the career. That's the career drive that I'm on. But health stuff I've always loved. So I'm hoping to combine them in my future and hopefully do some work in health law or complete only work in health law. So I'm going to stick with you for this last question for you, Dr. Wheatley Price. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's a hard question when looking at it, might be for part of it, but I'm wondering what the least favorite parts of the show are hosting the podcast and what your favorite parts about hosting your podcasts are.
The least favorite parts are when I'm talking to someone who's boring. Thankfully that's not very often. And we do a little bit of a little bit of advanced work because, you know, as well as I do that, and we all know, and everyone who's listening to this knows that some people are more interesting than others. So sometimes people kind of go off on a tangent and they go on and on and on. And sometimes their tone of their voices can be a bit soporific, you know, whereas, you know, people who are much more enthusiastic and their voice is up and down and laughing and we have a bit of banter. So that's the hardest bit. And I guess the opposite is the best bit, I think, is, and I hope this doesn't sound too cheesy or too syrupy, but it kind of is inspirational to hear lots of different stories about from my colleagues about what they're working in, but it's particularly from patients about how they approach a diagnosis of lung cancer, the things they've learned about themselves, the stories they've got to share is really, it's really quite cool. And I not to get too philosophical on this, but, When we teach our students about how to communicate with patients, there's a whole course on how to take a medical history. And we go on about a thing called a therapeutic relationship, which is the idea that you're able to build a rapport with your patients such as that so that they'll trust you and listen to you and maybe take your advice if you hopefully you give good advice. But for me, I've taken that therapeutic relationship and really tried to make it a two-way process. And recognize that I can learn and be a better person, be a better doctor by learning from my patients. And I have to say that I think the podcast really has helped me do that.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think it's funny that you say therapeutic conversation, therapeutic patient histories, because I think that a lot of times when podcast hosts like you and I get to interview people, a lot of the times it's therapeutic for them. They haven't, other than with people that they're really close with, they haven't gotten to go through their whole medical history, their triumphs and their hardships front to back like that, like they would in a podcast. And that in itself can be therapeutic.
You know, I agree with you, and I kind of go, Jacob, a bit beyond that. There are patients that have been on my podcast who have not told their families the full extent of their illness. And some of them have, you know, have said no to being on the podcast because of that. But some of them have then used the podcast to tell a story that they, you know, as you can imagine, may have found harder to say face-to-face to someone. So I do think sometimes telling the story can be therapeutic for them. What I was kind of getting at is it's therapeutic for me as well. And I think there's a lot of talk these days about physician wellness, and that's, you know, people who work in the healthcare business, not just doctors, nurses, or whoever, you know, get burned out and we're overwhelmed and people are struggling. And for sure, that's true for a lot of people. I have to say personally, I haven't been burned out but I attribute part of that to, I think, an openness to learn from my patients. And I think that is partly what contributes to my wellness, is allowing my, I guess being a bit vulnerable with patients in terms of what you share with them, but also then allowing myself to learn from them.
Yeah, that's absolutely incredible. And it's amazing to know that you kind of take your patients' feedback and you run with it. Actually, I have a funny story. My girlfriend is an ER nurse, and she was saying how she was working, I think, in kind of a waiting room, or I can't remember what pod it was, but she was dealing with a lot of cancer patients. And I said, oh, that's so hard. It must be hard for you and kind of depressing and not a great day. But she was saying they were amazing. They were saying how she smelled so nice and she looked so pretty. And it's funny, sometimes you think of patients with cancer as just like the typical pale skin with a bandana on their head, no hair. But a lot of the times these people are happy and they appreciate life because they know they still have it. And it's incredible to think about it from that instance. In wrapping up our conversation a little bit, we're getting close to time. These final two questions are for you, Dr. Chu. So I'm curious about your view on cancer research. And this is kind of a hard question. I didn't know if I want to ask it, but I'm going to anyway. So in terms of the ever-present issue of quote unquote finding a cure, do you ever get disheartened by the fact that we as a society haven't found an all-encompassing cure for cancer yet? Or do you use it more as a fuel to drive and keep pushing yourself and colleagues to try to find treatment methods? How do you view that and not, we haven't found a cure yet?
So I think, right, cure is, of course, everybody's in cancer care, in patients' point of view, so society is a holy grail. I think it is achievable, but it will be a while before we can, because cancer is really very, very complex. And one lung cancer and the next lung cancer, one breast cancer, the next is different. And we are now starting, right, to basically, as I say, we divided, right, the cancer into subgroups and different subtypes. And I think, right, we have done, right, some major advancement, even in the spread setting, like immunotherapy, for some of them, right, that the immunotherapy really works well, and they received 2 years of treatment, and then 3 years later, they are still alive. And those things are not just anecdotal kind of stories. Now, it's like trials say, is about, right, a good percentage of patients still alive. So those are, like, so I think, right, we can now, in the spread setting, we can achieve what we call long-term survival with a good quality of life so patients can enjoy life. And in terms of cure, as Paul have mentioned at the very beginning, we now, or I have some of these drugs are now able to cure more patients, but it's small, well, we used to call them small baby steps, but the steps lately in many of these trials actually show us a very big step. So I think we are going there, but I don't think we are able to achieve it for everybody. So many things need to be done. We have to understand cancers better. We have to screen and so that people get detected earlier and therefore there are more chances so that they can be alive, right, with or without extra treatment after initial surgery or radiation, whatever that we need to do. And this lofty goal, or still can call it, is actually is our drive. We want to make people live better. If we can cure them, it's even better. And that's right, how this cancer world is, right? As I've mentioned, it's that like, oh, we find one drug that works. Oh, now we have to think about how it becomes or resistant, right, in a cancer. So we have the next one better. So it's just this constant drive. And some people will say, you guys are driving yourself crazy already doing this. No, when it is scientific things, it's actually very stimulating. Like, how do we do it? And how do we do better? And then the right to society, to patients, of course, right? They want to be living longer and longer. And so, like, those kind of things are what keep this job great. And also, this is also, to me, is that this is the inspiration. And also, recently, we have a couple of medical students that came through the clinic. They approached one of our residents, and she told me is that they're all very interested because they find this field is a mix of many things. You have the human aspect of treating the patient, being, to be honest, being vulnerable is actually not a bad thing. And then, right, but at the same time, you're scientific. And then you have education, so because we educate the patients, next generation. And they do find that right, this job is actually a very interesting job of a mix of many things. And each aspect, or you can take on all of them as what it is, or you can take a little bit of everything to keep your life interesting. And that may be the reasons, even though our job is not the easiest, I'll have to say for 95% of the days, but this is one of the things that keep us going, but at the same, and also to prevent burnout, right? Because the science part, and then you see a patient who is doing so well, you didn't expect that at the beginning, does a pat on my back. And that is kind of like, when you go to sleep, or you might have a good night's sleep because you have done, you have to make a difference, maybe to one or two people. But that's just the beginning, right? More will come, right, in the future. So this is great. Like, there's just a constant quest for better. And this is us.
Definitely. Yeah, it's amazing to hear that. It's not, obviously, the medicine can't purely look for a cure. There has to be something in the meantime. And in the meantime, it's lifting up that quality of life for patients so that they can live their best lives while they're still with us and fighting as hard as they can. And as a final question for you, Dr. Chu, I'm wondering what your favorite part about working with cancer patients is and all the work that you do at the Cross Cancer Institute here in Edmonton.
So I think, right, cancer patients in general, many of them are now more and more open to talk about their cancer. And I find that the most satisfying part, yes, aside from making them live better and longer, and even for the one that passed, like with their family members say, oh, my mom and my dad loves coming to see you, have a pack on my back. And I think that's the best part. Like, it just basically validate that I have made a difference to somebody's life. However long and short, to me, it doesn't matter. It makes a difference and it gives you a smile in the face. Keep going. And the Cross is a very interesting place. Like the nurses and us, the pharmacists, and so we all know each other. Like there are over 1,000 something people there. And many of us know everybody. Even the new ones very quickly will know, oh, Dr. Chu is a little bit exoteric with that. Dr. X is a little bit this way. They very quickly, but we work as a group. It's a very group work environment. And then many of us, right, outside work are friends as well. So, and then some of them, I know their family very well, that sort of thing. And then even like a porter know who I am, I know who he is. Like this is how it is. And across is generally, we're one of those is that we all know, all right, the system everywhere is very tight. And ours is very tight in every different aspect. But everybody is trying to do the best that they can. And the patients are actually part of our family. And we have a board from radiology, putting outside radiology, which is where I go up to my office. They would write down, thank you for the staff and that sort of thing. They put in some statements, really is that part, to make us feel very good about ourselves, to be honest. But at the same time is that we're a family, we're together. So this thing about the cross is always like this. Everybody is having one goal, is to make patients' life better in Northern Alberta.
Yeah, that's incredible to hear that it's basically a family environment there. And you obviously need that because of the hard times that people are going through in the clinic. So it's amazing to hear that. And well, amazing. This has been such an amazing chat today. I don't like just ending on a cold call. So I'm grateful to both of you for being here today, giving up your valuable time and being on the show. And I'll start with you, Dr. Wheatley Price. Anything, what's current in your world? What's going on between podcasts, maybe LCC, anything going on for you right now?
So we are busy with our training program. I run our training program at Lung Cancer Canada. We're busy with updating our patient guide. In fact, I've got a call with LCC in about 3 minutes. And clinical work moves on apace. And I just still love my job. I'm happy to be doing it all.
Perfect. What about you,
Thanks
Dr.
for
Chu?
Having me on the pod.
Of course, really quickly
for me it's like continue the quest, right, to find better, like in terms of better treatment, better diagnostic, right, a test for patients so that patient can get their care as quickly as possible, as the best treatment that we can provide. At the same time, right, to continue to build up this relationship with my patients. Like many of my patients do know me quite well in other aspects. And that part is actually very good because they treat me like basically family. And same as me, right? I know them. And so I just like that and continue to inspire the next generation because we are all getting a little bit older. Our chances of getting cancer will get higher as we get older. And so I want the next generation to basically work in a even more inspiring environment, more advances will happen. And so when I need their help, then I get some good people to look after me.
Perfect. Just a little selfish dig at the very end of everyone gonna look out for themselves, you know?
No, but it's really is like, it's very important to have people. Your success is just not enough. You need the next generation to be successful. So you just success building on success, and that's what I want, to be honest with you. And so that whoever needs the help, or including myself, I don't think I'm immortal in any ways, then all right, that things are there, all right, to help you to live better and live longer.
Absolutely, of course. Well, that's a perfect way to end off the day. So thank you for both of your times, and with that I'll just send us right through to our outro. That was such a fun episode. I loved the banter between Dr. Wheatley Price and Dr. Chu. They obviously go way back, and it was great to hear just how much they respect one another while also sending a few playful jabs back and forth. I also loved how Dr. Wheatley Price gave us the sort of social side of medicine, describing his work with LCC and his love for patient interaction, whereas Dr. Chu gave us a little more of the scientific side, diving into the treatments that are currently being used for lung cancer. As we always do, I'll end the episode with my final three concluding thoughts from the interview. The first is about when I asked Dr. Wheatley Price about why he loves practicing in lung cancer and what drew him to it, and he said the lung cancer patients themselves. He mentioned how those with lung cancer are disproportionately in lower socioeconomic levels than other cancers, and he just loves helping out these people who clearly make him smile whenever he is in clinic. And the fact that lung cancer disproportionately affects those who are in a lower socioeconomic status just goes to show how important charities like LCC and Alberta Lung are in helping out those individuals with things like financial funding, medication purchasing, just anything of that nature. So it's obviously incredibly important that we keep helping and honestly funding through donations charities like Lung Cancer Canada and Alberta Lung. It's just so important. This isn't even me coming from an employee standpoint, because I technically don't work for Alberta Lung anymore, but I understand the ramifications that a charity like that can have on such a big group of people. They've helped out hundreds of people and families over the years in purchasing groceries when they can't afford them because of their lung disease, for whatever reason, medication setbacks, things like that. So it's just really important that we help out people that need help the most. Secondly, I thought that it was incredible how the Lung Cancer Voices podcast came to light because of the generosity of one of Dr. Wheatley Price's patients who had lung cancer and wanted to give back. Oftentimes, you'd imagine that a person who beats cancer never wants to talk about it again or hear the word cancer again. But this patient was so gracious in wanting to give lung cancer in Canada a pedestal and a platform to educate the public and give a voice to lung cancer patients. It was also amazing when Dr. Wheatley Price told us that hosting the podcast is actually therapeutic for him in getting to hear the stories of patients and learning about new research strategies in lung cancer. I completely agree with that. It's just, it's amazing getting to host this podcast. Honestly, it's a privilege for me. I kind of went up to my boss when I started at Alberta Lung, cap in hand, and asked if I could start a podcast to kind of get lung disease out there and be a, sort of an advocate. And I didn't quite grasp the impact that it would have on me and just everyone from researchers, physicians, patients specifically. I remember some of the patient episodes that I've done. I've literally been choked up during and afterwards of some of the stories that were told. So we like to, sometimes I think that, and I even said it, excuse me, I said it in the podcast earlier, that this platform, this podcast gives a platform for patients to kind of vent and get out their disease process and explain what they're going through and the issues that they're having in their life, and that it's therapeutic for them. But honestly, it's therapeutic for me too. It's so amazing to hear these stories and kind of be able to empathize with people who are going through something that is so much harder than you, that you can't understand. I can't understand what it's like to have a lung disease. I can research it, I can talk to people who have it, I can try to get the word out there, but I can't completely understand what it is. And it's only through platforms like this, podcasts, having conversations, telling stories, that we're able to uncover those amazing feats that people with lung disease achieve every day. And finally, Dr. Chu's answer to my question about finding a cure for cancer was just so eye-opening. He kind of took my question, which was really one-dimensional, and made it three-dimensional. And by this, I mean that finding a cure for cancer isn't the only goal in cancer treatment. It can't be. We have to ensure that patients are comfortable during their treatment processes and try to give them the highest quality of life. And when I say me, obviously, I have nothing to do with that. People that are a lot smarter and a lot braver and a lot more courageous than me working in places like the Cross Cancer Institute and across Canada working with cancer patients are the real heroes. I'm just someone behind a mic that's trying to get the word out there. But approaching cancer treatment with tunnel vision and only looking for a cure and not ensuring the highest quality of life for patients in the present doesn't work out. And we obviously know that. This is from exactly what I just said. This is what the amazing staff at organizations like the Cross Cancer Institute are doing here in Edmonton, ensuring the highest quality of life possible for patients. So I think what I'm getting at is just say thank you to your medical practitioners. Obviously, it's hard doing so when you're going through something incredibly difficult like cancer, but we always have to thank those who are looking out for us, Even if you're not going through a medical problem, you see a doctor in the street, you see someone in a lab coat, you see someone, you're just going to your GP for a checkup. Say thank you for what they do. Obviously, what they do is hard work, and they have to deal with the lows of society every day. Sickness isn't fun. They have to deal with people who aren't doing well, and that's their calling. That's what they love to do, but we can still be appreciative for that. Okay, well, that'll do it for our show today. Thank you for tagging along for another episode of the Unsung Lung Podcast. As a brief reminder, for any questions you may have about lung health and where you can help those with lung disease in Alberta, go to www.ablung.ca and browse our website. We have everything from educational material to support groups, and you can always help out by making a donation. Perfect. Well, everyone, spring is in the air, the weather is getting warmer day by day, and I just hope you can get outside and enjoy May in Alberta or wherever you're listening from. With that, I'll leave you with our motto. As always, just remember to breathe.